I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. If you're thinking about it, chances are we're talking about it on WHYY's Radio Times.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice.
Currently, there are 228 people on death row in Pennsylvania. The state has executed three people since 1978 when the death penalty was reinstated. And six death row inmates have been released in the last 21 years. The American Bar Association released a report this month that found serious flaws in Pennsylvania's death penalty system. The president-elect of the ABA said the problems found in this assessment strike at the very heart of Pennsylvania's justice system. The five-member team called for a number of reforms. They include better-trained lawyers for defendants charged with capital crimes or representing prisoners on death row, audio or videotaping of interrogations, and improved jury instructions to reduce misunderstandings, especially about the meaning of life in prison without parole. Not everyone agrees with the panel's findings and recommendations, and that includes one of our guests today on Radio Times. Ron Eisenberg is Deputy District Attorney for the City of Philadelphia, supervising the DA's Law Division. He's a former member of the Criminal Procedural Rules Committee of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And Ron Eisenberg, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. And Bowen Poulin is the chair of this ABA panel, also professor of law at Villanova University School of Law, where she teaches criminal procedure, evidence, and trial practice. She previously served as assistant U.S. attorney in Chicago, Illinois. And Anne Bowen Poulin, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Thank you, Marty.
Why was it important to do this study?
Well, across the country, courts, legislatures, and lawyers of all stripes are wrestling with issues about the fairness and reliability of the administration of the death penalty. And the ABA has been looking at this process. They've been very concerned about it, and they decided to study initially in nine states, and then after Katrina, they dropped Louisiana out. But they commissioned studies in eight states where there were significant death row populations, and Pennsylvania was one of those states.
Would you say, based on this report and some of the findings, that there are either innocent people on Pennsylvania's death row or people who should have received a lesser sentence? Can you say that?
We didn't look at specific cases, and it's not something I can say without looking at specific cases. We were looking at the process, the procedural guarantees or the lack of procedural checks in the process. And you have to have concern that people have been placed on death row without receiving due process.
Let me turn to you, Ron, and we'll get into some of the specifics of this report. Do you welcome an investigation into Pennsylvania's death penalty system?
Well, Marty, I think when people hear ABA, American Bar Association, some of them may assume that that's some kind of a neutral legal organization, and that's really just not the case. This is a group of lawyers, very few prosecutors proportionately among them, who, on the whole, are opposed to the death penalty. And in fact, the so-called report that was issued here in Pennsylvania and in the other states was a project of what the ABA calls its Death Penalty Moratorium Implementation Project. So the purpose of the ABA project that resulted in this study is to create a nationwide moratorium on the death penalty. And according to the ABA's website about the study, they received a major grant from the European Commission in order to fund these studies of American states. Now, the European Commission, in case people don't know, is staunchly against the death penalty. They just held a couple of weeks ago a continent-wide anti-death penalty day in Europe. And clearly, the intent of the grant and the intent of the moratorium implementation project is not simply to do a neutral study about the death penalty.
You're saying this is a stealth study to do away with the death penalty in Pennsylvania?
It's intended, I think, from the inception to paint a picture of the death penalty that will cause people to shy away from it.
Well, let me get a response from our other guest. Go ahead, Ann.
I think that Ron's criticism is simply not fair. The question of whether to have a death penalty was not on the table. And regardless of how he feels about the ABA as a national organization, the team that worked with me on this included former prosecutors, a sitting judge, a member of the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office. This was not a group that was biased against the death penalty in any way. And we were not looking at whether Pennsylvania should have a death penalty. We were looking at questions of how the death penalty is implemented. And the fact of the matter is, one point of tremendous concern when you look at the way the death penalty is administered throughout the state is that it's not a level playing field. That in essentially every case, the prosecution has resources and staffing that the defense does not have. That's a tremendous concern.
When, though, the ABA calls for a moratorium, is that another way of saying we want to end the death penalty, or is it, or are they saying we want to look at the death penalty to see whether it's fair and working?
It's the latter, absolutely the latter. The reason for a moratorium and the reason that the Illinois governor asked for a moratorium and a number of states have implemented moratoriums on executions is that the procedures are questionable, that the process does not seem to be fair and accurate and reliable.
And I want to get to those procedures. As it stands now, though, Ron, looking at Pennsylvania's death penalty system, would you say it is fair and equitable as it exists today?
It's just not true that prosecutors have these disproportionate resources. In fact, in many jurisdictions, especially many of the smaller jurisdictions, prosecutors have to pass on what ought to be under the law death penalty cases because they know they're not going to have the money and the resources to put into these. And it's common, even in Philadelphia, in cases that my lawyers that I work with, my colleagues litigate every day, that they'll come into court with some kind of question where expert testimony is involved. And the other side will come in with three and four and sometimes five experts that they're paying for. We can barely afford one. It may be $20,000 or $30,000 for us to pay for that expert's evaluation and testimony in court, and the other side may produce four to our one.
But is that an argument for some kind of investigation into Pennsylvania's death penalty system?
Well, I think we have what we ought to do is investigate individual cases, and the way we ought to do it is through what we call the court system. We take a defendant, we charge him with a crime, we go through months and months of procedures, we impanel a jury of his peers to sit and make the final judgment about guilt or innocence. Then we review that death penalty case every which way we can in a process that remarkably takes usually 20 to 30 years of litigation in the courts. You mentioned that there have been three executions in Pennsylvania over the last, I think it's something like 40 years. During that time from Pennsylvania's death row, I believe 12 death penalty defendants have died of natural causes. So four times as many people on death row in Pennsylvania are dying essentially of old age as are dying from the carrying out of their sentences.
So you're saying there actually isn't a death penalty system in Pennsylvania?
Well,
where people are actually executed?
It's been pretty much dragged down to virtually a snail's pace right now, and I don't really think that that's the will of the people, and I think that reports like this are designed to get at the will of the people because the polling keeps showing that a large majority of citizens in the United States think that under some circumstances, in some individual cases, the death penalty is appropriate.
You want to respond to that? Then I do want to get into some of these specific recommendations.
There are a number of points there. Let me start with Ron's initial point, that the way we make sure that the system is fair is through the appellate process, through the post-conviction process. And probably 20 years ago, I wouldn't have disagreed with that, because we do have due process guarantees and an appearance of fairness. But if anything indicates that the process isn't effective at guaranteeing reliable results, it's the number of innocence cases around the country where defendants who have been convicted, whose convictions have been reviewed on direct appeal and reviewed on post-conviction review, and then DNA evidence has become available to show unequivocally that they were wrongfully convicted. So it's clear that something's wrong with the system, and that this happens in some death penalty cases as well. And there have been death penalty cases in Pennsylvania where that kind of exoneration has occurred. So the system isn't working effectively. There are problems at every stage. Ron also talked about cases where the defense comes in with four experts and the prosecution has only one. That has to be a rare case. It's very difficult for indigent defendants, and the vast majority of defendants are indigent, to persuade the court to appoint experts, to give them access to experts so that they have a level playing field that's
No, go ahead. Finish your thought there.
I think I lost the end.
And
of
that's
my thought.
Okay. Let me pick up on a couple of these recommendations. We'll hear first from you and then from Ron. One problem identified in this report was the quality of the lawyers representing prisoners, inmates, or defendants, I guess, facing the death penalty. What is the problem there?
Well, it's a multi-layered problem. For one thing, you don't have an assurance that the most highly trained lawyers are handling these cases. Death penalty representation is a specialty, not just because of the seriousness of the charges, but because of the complex nature of the entire sentencing determination. The ABA recommends, and everyone who has looked seriously at appropriate defense representation in capital cases recommends, appointing two attorney teams. That doesn't happen in Pennsylvania. Except in one instance. About 15 years ago, the Defenders Association in Philadelphia started for the first time handling capital cases. And they staff their cases with two attorneys per case. They have investigators available to them in the office. So they have a much better support team. And I think their track record has been very good.
And that would be a recommendation that, at least in Philadelphia, was carried out even before this report
just by
came
the
out.
Defenders Association. They only take a fifth of the cases. Right. So one out of every five capital defendants in Philadelphia gets that level of representation. The other four, by and large, do not.
You're shaking your head, Ron.
It's just not true. In fact, in Philadelphia, in every case where counsel is appointed to the defendant in a capital case, two lawyers are appointed, not just the public defenders, but every person who's not represented by the public defenders and gets a lawyer appointed by the court, two lawyers are appointed. We have had standards in Philadelphia, which is where most of the death penalties in Pennsylvania come from, because it's where most of the murders in Pennsylvania come from. We have had standards in Pennsylvania that were written by the criminal defense bar and that have been in place for at least 15 years now. And the people who manage those standards, the people who decide who gets onto the list, who qualifies as competent counsel in Philadelphia, that's all decided by a panel of defense attorneys here in Philadelphia. And now statewide, we have statewide rules for qualifications for defense lawyers that were imposed by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court on the basis of an ad hoc committee they put together with prosecutors, I was on it, defense lawyers, and judges from all around the state, to require that every lawyer appointed in, or hired privately to take a capital case in Pennsylvania has to have a certain number of years of experience, a certain number of trials that they've had, a certain number of amount of homicide experience, and continuing legal education on all aspects of litigating capital cases.
So you're saying these lawyers representing defendants in capital cases have the qualifications to do the job?
Yes, they do.
We're almost up in a break, but go ahead, Ann.
Well, one of the things we did note in our report is that Pennsylvania has taken that step with the rule it enacted of requiring some minimal training. But the fact of the matter is that across the state, funding is done county by county for defense representation for indigent capital defendants. And in some counties, it's at a low enough level so that essentially these attorneys are taking on a major case and having to work it almost for free, and it crushes their practice. And even with the assurance of some level of training, there is not a tremendous level of support. It's difficult for these attorneys to get investigators, and generally they're not working as part of a two-lawyer team.
And that's Ann Bowen-Poulin, and she's the chair of an ABA panel that looked at the system of death penalty in Pennsylvania, just released a report. Ron Eisenberg, deputy district attorney for the city of Philadelphia. We invited both of them to join us today on Radio Times to talk about this report and the death penalty in Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.
Art and Theater Company supports WHYY and presents Michael Hollinger's An Empty Plate in the Café de Grand Bouffe, a bittersweet comedy in seven courses, through December 9th, 215-922-1122 or artandtheater.org.
Villanova University proudly supports WHYY. Villanova is hosting a graduate open house on Tuesday, October 23rd from 3:30 to 7:30 p.m. on Villanova's campus. There will be a seminar in Villanova School of Business graduate programs at 6:30 p.m. This is an opportunity to learn more about Villanova's part-time professional MBA, accelerated MBA, and executive MBA programs. Details available online at openhouse.villanova.edu.
Let me take 30 seconds to thank the nearly 5,500 listeners who joined our nearly 100,000-plus members this past week. Your generosity simply fuels our programming, and we look forward to expanding our news coverage with a new multimedia production devoted to health and life sciences. Local productions like this new one and The Next Mayor are direct results of your support. I'm Bill Morazzo, CEO of WHYY. On behalf of all of us at WHYY, I want to thank you very much.
Support for WHYY is provided by Freelancers Union at Working Today, providing health insurance, dental insurance, professional networking, and more to freelancers in a variety of industries. More at freelancersunion.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Ever since states began reinstating the death penalty, there have been heated debates about its effectiveness and its fairness. Critics point to a number of death row inmates who have been released in recent years, many because of DNA evidence. Supporters argue that it's a punishment reserved for the worst crimes, that there are checks and balances in the system, and that victims' rights have gotten lost in the debate. We're talking about a new report from the ABA, the American Bar Association, looking at Pennsylvania death penalty system. Anne Bowen Poulin chaired this ABA panel. She's also professor of law at Villanova University School of Law. Ron Eisenberg, deputy district attorney for the city of Philadelphia, supervising the DA's law division. And we got a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Going back to this report, Anne, it talks about the problems of false confessions, the problems of witness misidentification, crime lab errors. Just how systemic and, I guess, serious are these particular problems as you look at the system?
Well, in about 80% of the exoneration cases, the problem was traced back, at least in part, to eyewitness identification error. And there are best practices out there. There have been extensive studies of error in eyewitness identification and suggestions of how it can be done to reduce the level of error. And a number of states and a number of police departments have adopted those best practices. And what we recommend is that the Pennsylvania adopt those statewide.
And what would an example of one of those best practices be related to witness misidentification?
Well, one of the things that the studies show is that if you ask a witness to identify from a lineup or a photo spread the person who committed the crime, they feel pressure to pick someone, and they will pick the person who looks most like the person, and that then leads them sometimes to make a mistake. If instead of showing them a group of five or six and giving them just the opportunity to compare, they're shown individuals sequentially, then they're much less likely to pick out of a group the person that looks most like the person who assaulted them, but not pick anyone unless they see someone who actually is the person.
What do you think of that, Ron Eisenberg?
Well, the reason that there are fewer IDs in that situation is because there are fewer IDs overall in that situation. In other words, whenever you're trying to compare your memory to photos, pictures, live images that you are looking at, you need to make some kind of a comparison. And if it rises to the level where you think that that image that you're seeing is the same one that was in your memory, you say so. That's what you're asked to do. When you intentionally, you know, almost try to trick the witness by withholding from them all the bases of comparison, then it becomes much harder for them. And what the very studies that Anne is referring to have shown is that not only quote-unquote false identifications, but also true identifications go down when you withhold from the witness the ability to make a more general comparison. It's as if you were buying a car or some other object, and you were choosing among three or four, and you wanted to decide which one you really liked the best, you'd want to look at them side by side to figure out so that you wouldn't have to recall totally from memory what each individual one looked like in order to make a final decision.
But looking at the Innocence Project, and obviously their work is to get people off of death row who are innocent, from their perspective, they say eyewitness errors are one of the main reasons for innocent people being on prison.
Mentioned that, because that's another aspect of this quote-unquote study that I think would have been presented differently had it truly been a neutral body that didn't start out with a national moratorium as its agenda before it, quote-unquote, looked, researched any at any of these states. We hear the kind of figure that Ann gave earlier, 80% of the exonerations. Well, what does that mean, really? How many exonerations are there? We've talked about numbers like six people released in Pennsylvania. Even among those six, by the way, there's a great dispute about whether how many of them were really innocent. Even nationally, there was a study from the University of Michigan, hardly a bastion of pro-prosecution, that found that overall, not just death penalties, they were able to identify about 340 exonerations, innocent people, out of all of the cases that they looked at. But during the time that they were looking at those cases, there were something like 500,000 murders and millions of other cases, and they came up with about 340 exonerations. Now, let's say they were low, and there was really 4,000 exonerations mm-hmm. out of millions of cases. Well, now we're taking 80% of those 350 or 400 cases. We're talking about a handful of all the cases that have been tried during this period. We're talking about numbers that are in the tenths and hundredths of a percent, not 80%.
Go ahead, Ann.
Well, when we talk about exonerations with DNA, you're talking about a very small number of cases where you can even test anything because so much evidence has been destroyed over the years. So we have to look at these exonerations as a prism through which we can view the fairness of the procedures and from which through which we have to figure out where the mistakes are made. And it is clear that eyewitness identification is an area mm-hmm. with tremendous risk of error. In a number of jurisdictions, New Jersey, for example, they have adopted the best practices doing sequential identification. It's not like buying a car. You can narrow it down and know that you want one of two or three cars. But when a victim or an eyewitness is asked to look at a lineup or look at a photo spread, it's possible that the perpetrator isn't in that group, and that's where the error comes in. The perpetrator isn't there. They pick the person who looks most like their memory, and then you have the wrong person prosecuted and, sad to say, the wrong person convicted.
We've done whole shows about this. Let me move on. And I mean, this is an important issue, but let me move on to another one of the findings in this report, and I'll put this back to you, Ann. This has to do with racial disparities. The minority population in Pennsylvania is 11%. 65% of death row inmates in Pennsylvania are minority. Does that tell you that there is racism working in the system?
Well, that alone doesn't necessarily tell you there's racism working in the system, but it certainly does set off an alarm, raise a red flag, however you want to think about it. But there have been several studies that have looked at the application and processes of imposing the death penalty in Pennsylvania, and the studies that have looked at it have found evidence of racial disparity in the imposition of the death penalty.
How so?
Well, they've found that at a number of stages in the process, racial disparity creeps in. Now, these studies at this point are older, mm-hmm. and what we call for is a study looking at the question, a study with the state's backing so that you can get at the data. We didn't have the resources to study the racial application, but the studies that have been done raise a red flag, and this is something that Pennsylvania has to look at, and they have to do it with the force of the governor's office or the court so they can actually gather the data and evaluate it and find out if something has changed since these studies were done or whether we still have a problem with the racial application of the death penalty.
The idea being, and we'll hear from you, Ron, the idea being that let's say you have two defendants both charged with essentially the same crime. If you're a minority, there's a greater chance that you would be charged with a more serious crime and end up on death row?
Well, it appears that what happens is there's a cumulative process. There may be different choices about how to charge. Juries clearly view defendants of color differently, so they may tend to view them. They in some studies, it's been revealed that they tend to see a minority defendant as more dangerous, and therefore they're more likely to impose the death penalty rather than to be persuaded by mitigating factors not to impose the death penalty.
Let me hear from you, Ron Eisenberg. Go ahead.
The premise of this whole discussion is again the kind of misuse of statistics that happens in a study that I don't think is really a fair study to begin with. Anne compared the percentage of minorities on death row to the percentage of their population in the state as a whole. Well, that's not that's a ridiculous comparison. We don't just randomly select people and transport them from death row from, you know, the counties and cities and byways of Pennsylvania. They're selected from among those who commit the crime of murder. You have to commit murder in order to get onto death row. You have to be arrested for it, tried, and convicted by a jury of your peers beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, in Philadelphia, as it happens, the percentage of murders committed among minorities, that is, it's not just the defendant who's a minority, it's a victim who's a minority, is about 80%. That's a horrible, terrible thing, and it's wonderful that yesterday there were 6,000 men out to try to do something about that on the streets of Philadelphia. But to say that the numbers of people who are receiving the death penalty are disproportionate compared to the population, as compared to the percentage of eligible murderers, it just makes no sense.
And you're saying because specifically of Philadelphia and its murder rate, and
well,
who commits murders in Philadelphia?
There are certainly more minorities in Philadelphia and the surrounding area than in many other parts of this state, but we're talking about statewide figures. Those are the numbers that are thrown at us all the time in support of this racism argument. And in fact, there are other studies that unfortunately weren't mentioned in this ABA report from the University of Maryland, for example, from Cornell University, for example, that have examined the death penalty and that have concluded that they haven't been able to find a racial effect, either based on the race of the victim or the race of the defendant, that blacks are arguably, if anything, underrepresented on death row. And we don't see that kind of study discussed here.
But would you welcome the study that this study calls for, which is let's get a brand new look at Pennsylvania and take a look at who these people are on death row and what the racial play out is?
No, because we should stop examining this situation based on cards like race or alleged innocence or any of that thing, and we ought to look at individual cases. Nobody is saying that we ought to have the death penalty for everyone. Nobody is saying we ought to have the death penalty for every murder. We're saying that we ought to have the death penalty in very select cases. It's really only about 1% of all the murders that occur, and the way we decide which among those are horrible enough to merit the death penalty is by submitting the case to a jury. That's the study that we conduct, and that's the way that we have to do it. We have John Wayne Gacy, we have Ted Bundy, we have people like that who jurors have decided, and I think will decide again in the future, deserve the death penalty.
Well, talk about the jurors,
well,
if you would. But go ahead.
I'd like to point out a few things. One is that the studies control for racial difference in the level of charging. They look at this through statistical methods that give an accurate result. And it is clear that there is racial bias in the system. Whether that how that comes in is less clear, and it needs to be looked at thoroughly. Now, as far as the jurors go, of course, there's always the risk, and one of the studies has shown racial bias in the selection of the juries as well. But one of the problems that comes in with jurors in this state and the imposition of the death penalty is that the rate at which jurors do not understand the jury instructions that they're
given.
And you mean
do not understand?
Tremendously confused about how they are supposed to think about whether a particular defendant receives capital punishment or receives life in prison. One of the points of pervasive confusion, both in the public at large and it persists when people are selected to serve on capital juries, is that people don't believe that in Pennsylvania a life sentence means a life sentence, whereas in Pennsylvania it is absolutely true that when someone is convicted of first-degree murder, the choice is between them spending the rest of their natural life in prison or being executed. Mm. And jurors
Why don't they know that? Why don't they know that, though? And then we'll get to Ron. Then I do want to get to our calls.
Well, I think there are a couple things going on, is that the public comes to the jury, and they're selected with their knowledge that they come in with a very strong sense that someone convicted of murder and sentenced to life will get out after, I think that one study showed that people think they would get out around 10 years. Mm. And the other is that they just don't understand the instructions.
And these would be the instructions from the judge.
The judge's instructions on how to evaluate the decision of whether to impose the death penalty. So one of the recommendations that we make is that there be a very detailed and careful redrafting of the instructions that juries will receive in capital cases.
Do you have any problem with that, Ron?
Well, Sure, especially when we talk about specifics like life means life. These are instructions that have been tested in cases and in the courts for decades now. And every little change in every word will only give rise to more decades of litigation, which is beneficial if you're a defendant who's been convicted of murder and placed on death row, but is not good for the system. Now, when it comes to life means life, for example, that's not actually true. And so it's not surprising that there might be jurors who don't totally believe it. There's no such thing technically as parole from a life sentence in Pennsylvania, but you can certainly escape a life sentence by virtue of commutation and pardon.
And although and how that's, often does that
well,
happen?
Well, it's rare right now, but 20 years ago, for example, it was extremely common. Hundreds of people were pardoned, had their sentences commuted, and were released from prison. Now, is it going to happen to a defendant tomorrow? I think the likelihood is small. But when a defendant's being sentenced to life today, we're not talking about the possibility of release tomorrow. We're asking the juror, in effect, to imagine what the situation is going to be like 20 or 30 years from now when that person might be otherwise eligible for parole. Now, can we tell the jury accurately what the political situation is going to be like then? Many of the same people who are opposed to the death penalty are opposed to life sentences also, and there are active efforts right now, today, in the Pennsylvania legislature to change that life sentence, which Ann says is so immutable, so that there will be ways to be released long before the end of life, even as early as after the age of 50. Now, those efforts may never succeed. They might succeed next year. To tell the jury the lie that this defendant will never get out, I don't think serves the process.
Well, I need to go back because I need to get a response from you, Ann.
Well, I think Ron's answer illustrates exactly the problem. Right now, no one gets their sentence commuted. In order to grant clemency, the Pennsylvania Constitution requires that the governor have a unanimous recommendation from the clemency board. It is not going to happen that these sentences are going to be commuted and that people are going to be pardoned. It has not happened. Clemency is so unavailable that the defendants aren't even seeking it these days.
But should there be clemency, do you think?
There should be the possibility. But the district attorney's office wants to create this sense that there's a real likelihood that the life sentences that are imposed today under the provision that life means life have the risk of being commuted, have the risk of disappearing. And by making that argument, they maintain the juror's perspective that the only way of incapacitating a defendant is through execution.
Go ahead, Ron. You're shaking your head.
If the prosecutor says anything to the jury, even one word suggesting that the defendant can get out of jail on a life sentence, the defendant is entitled to an instruction, I think an unfair instruction from our point of view, that in fact life means life. Now, that's the law as it stands now, and this whole debate about instructions about jurors is not whether they should get an instruction in the situation I just described, where it's actually an issue, where actually anybody even suggests it to them, but whether they should get such an instruction even when there's been no suggestion of it whatsoever in the trial. The United States Supreme Court already requires such an instruction whenever there is any argument or suggestion to the jury that the defendant might not have to serve a whole life sentence.
We're almost about to break here, but Ron, why shouldn't a jury understand the law in its complexities, even if it wasn't raised specifically?
They certainly should. How to do that, given the kind of complexity that I've described, is a very difficult thing. Since we don't know whether the efforts of some of the same people against the death penalty to essentially eliminate life without parole in Pennsylvania will succeed, since we don't know what a future governor's policies will be about commutation and pardon, it's very difficult to give an accurate instruction. And those that have attempted to present something with more complexity have normally been subject to objections by the defense.
And that's Ron Eisenberg, also with us, Ann Bowen-Poulin. And we are talking about debating a ABA, American Bar Association, report looking at death penalty in Pennsylvania. And chaired the ABA panel, Ron Eisenberg, Deputy District Attorney for the City of Philadelphia. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Give us a call. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY is provided by Interact Theater Company,
opening its 20th anniversary season with Last of the Boys. From the shadow of current conflicts in the Middle East arises a new drama that features two Vietnam veterans facing a past that continues to haunt them. Last of the Boys is a reminder that veterans understand better than anyone the real price of war. Playing through November 18th, tickets and information are available on the web at interacttheater.org.
I'm Marty Moscowane, inviting you to be in the audience when Radio Times visits Princeton University on Wednesday, October 24th at 6 p.m. We'll tape a program looking at the state of national politics, and you'll have a chance to ask some of the questions. To reserve your seat for this exclusive WHYY member event, call 215-351-0511 or visit whyy.org. If you're not already a member, you can join today. Thanks.
Justice can mean many things. It can mean a guilty verdict or expelling a bully from school. But what do we really want when we ask for justice? Some experts say we want our wounds understood. We want what was taken restored. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, we'll examine restorative justice, which aims to bring people together and repair relationships. That's today at noon here on WHYY 91 FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. There are currently 228 people on Pennsylvania's death row. According to a panel of the American Bar Association, Pennsylvania's death penalty system is inconsistent and flawed. The panel's findings were released last week. Ann Bowen Pullen chaired this ABA panel, also professor of law at Villanova University School of Law. Ron Eisenberg, deputy district attorney for the city of Philadelphia, supervising the DA's law division. And we got calls coming into 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. You've heard some of the findings. You've heard some of the criticisms of the findings. What do you think? Give us a call. We've got Charles from Trenton who called us up. Charles, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Just quickly, I would like to know if this study takes into account the possibility of life without parole versus the death penalty in terms of cost to the taxpayers. One of the reasons why the commission in New Jersey, where I live, decided to hold back on and review the administration of the death penalty was just costing us too much money, millions of dollars, to keep people on death row versus giving them the life without parole sentence. So that's what I would like to know.
Oh, well, Charles, I appreciate the call. I'm going to start first with Ann, then we'll hear from Ron. Go ahead, Ann. Did you look at the cost, I guess?
We didn't have the resources to pursue that kind of investigation. We understand that that's a potential problem. And, of course, what we're suggesting is that the state gather data that would allow them to make that assessment. But we were not able to make that assessment.
You want to speak to the cost issue, Ron, to keep people in death row?
Yeah, I think the main cause of cost regarding the death penalty is the incredible delay in the process. It's not so much the cost of the trial itself that we're talking about, but the cost of another 20 years of appeals that really adds up. And I agree we ought to reduce that, but not by getting rid of the death penalty, because when it comes to a guy like the one Philadelphian who was executed, Gary Heidnik, who was, you know, kidnapping women from a school for the those with mental disabilities and locking them up in his basement and torturing them. I think most people are going to think that whether we give the death penalty to a guy like that doesn't depend on dollars and cents.
Mm. Go ahead, because I know part of this other recommendation was better review of post-conviction hearings.
Right, and part of the problem that a defendant would run into in sitting on death row in Pennsylvania is that if, while the defendant was sitting on death row after a number of years, new testing became available so that DNA evaluation could be done where it couldn't previously, or new evidence of innocence came to light. Under the Pennsylvania Post-Conviction Act, the cutoff is very fast. From the moment that that claim is available, the defendant has 60 days to file for post-conviction relief. And if the defendant doesn't make that 60 days, then the defendant is barred. Now we're talking about somebody who's on death row and does not have a lawyer. So there's this sense that these appeals go on and on and on. But in fact, Pennsylvania's Post-Conviction Review Act makes that window very small for defendants after their first initial round of review. And when you hear the argument for reducing the review, for speeding up the process, remember what that would have meant for the people who have been released from death row. It would mean that these people who have been later found to be innocent would have been executed. That's a serious cost to pay.
Go ahead, Ron.
The bottom line is that no one on death row in Pennsylvania has, in the end, ever been knocked out of court on the basis of this kind of time limit. It's never happened. And even if the time limit were enforced as the law requires it to be, which I think some courts are not doing, it still shouldn't happen, because it's not true that these lawyers don't have that these defendants don't have lawyers. There is an agency funded by the federal government, which receives much more money per case than any prosecutors do, that goes out and looks at every single one of these cases of people sitting on death row, and they file documents that are hundreds of pages long in every one of these cases. Now, Ann has tried to make it look like there's some big complicated process involved here. You get a DNA test, which you think shows evidence that you're innocent. All the defendant has to do, even if he didn't have a lawyer, is basically send in a form to the court. He has to have them put a stamp on the envelope. Doesn't have to be his own stamp, of course. And they send in that form, and counsel will be appointed for him if he didn't previously have one, and proceedings will be initiated. Not just once or twice, but any number of times that he has such a claim. That's why we're looking at cases that are still being appealed in the courts 25 years later.
So you're saying 60 days is enough time, and that people on death row are taking advantage of that?
And if there is some problem with it, the courts are letting them into court anyway.
Very quickly, because I do want to get back to our callers.
Well, I don't want to get into a debate about the Post-Conviction Act in Pennsylvania, but there are cases where the defendants have been thrown out of court on procedural grounds. The act is interpreted quite strictly, but I don't think it makes sense to sit here and focus that.
Okay, let me get another caller. This is Tyler from Royersford, Pennsylvania. Tyler, go ahead, you're Radio Times.
Yeah, hi Marty. I just wanted to say, I'm not an attorney, okay? But I would like to say that I support Ron Eisenberg and keep up the good work, because I'll tell you what, just as a regular citizen, from a common sense perspective, listening to the two guests you have, it's pretty obvious who's on the right side of this argument and who is on the special interest side of this argument. And I'm sorry to say, if the proposal is to review our death penalty laws in Pennsylvania using more tax money to do it, it just seems like another bleeding heart special interest thing. It seems like the system works fine, and it does seem like your guest, Ann Pullen, is trying to make it sound like there's all these people who are getting these convictions overturned, a disproportionate number of people getting their convictions overturned on old evidence and things like that, when it's just not the case, when over 90% of these people have been convicted rightly and are serving their proper sentence. Thank you.
Okay, Tyler, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Go ahead, Ann.
Well, I think the point that the study is making is that these defendants have been convicted through a process, by and large, where the playing field has not been level, where they have not had adequate defense representation, where they have not had adequate access to investigative resources. And it may appear fair to you because of the way the convictions have been reviewed by the courts. But, in fact, if it's a product of an unequal playing field and a process that cannot assure the fairness and reliability of the results, then we should be very cautious about imposing the death penalty.
Is the goal a perfect system? I mean, a perfect system so that the truly guilty are on death row and the truly innocent are free?
Well, that would be the ideal. But we all know that you can't achieve perfection in any aspect of any world. But we certainly can identify some flaws in the current system that should be corrected that would move us in the direction of a more perfect system, and at least a system that we could say was fair.
You know, hold on to your thought, Ron, because I've got a caller, I think, for you. And this is Michael from East Falls. Michael, go ahead. You're Radio Times.
Yes, hello, Marty.
Hi.
Thank you for this excellent show.
Thank
I
you.
Want to call attention to a stunning example of this unequal playing field and how wrong things can go. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, but okay. It's not a great phone line, I have to tell you that.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Just
okay.
Make your
Jimmy
point.
Dennis has been in jail since 1991 for a crime he did not commit. Even if one innocent person is on death row, and I fear there are many more than that, that's something we cannot tolerate. There is no physical evidence linking Jimmy to the murder in 1991. No gun, no fingerprints, nothing. The evidence against Jimmy was dependent on eyewitness testimony of three people, all strangers to Jimmy, They all identified him as a shooter, despite the fact that his characteristics differ significantly from their original descriptions.
You know what, Michael, I got to jump in here only because it's not a great phone line, and you're talking about a very specific case that I'm not sure either of our guests can speak to directly. But at the same time, if there is an innocent person on death row, Ron Eisenberg, what should we do about that?
Well, obviously, we shouldn't execute anybody who's innocent. We should execute the people who are guilty, and that's really the whole problem. And it gets back to the previous caller now also. I'm not really questioning the sincerity of anybody on the other side of the debate. I'm just questioning their terms, because what this is really about is a fundamental moral question that I think is a legitimate one, but that society ought to be free to argue out honestly, and that is whether there are any cases where the death penalty is appropriate. If the ABA really believes that this is all about innocence, then they ought to be out there supporting proper procedures so that the guilty are executed, so that their sentences are carried out in accordance with what our system of justice has called for. If the ABA really says this is all about race, well, then they ought to be out there in cases where the murders are clearly the product of racism, like the Gary Heidner case I mentioned, or the Jasper, Texas case, where a group of whites dragged a black man behind a car until he died. They ought to be out there saying, yes, our system ought to be entitled to carry out the ultimate punishment in some of those cases. And they're not.
Hmm. Well, of course, the ABA position is supporting a moratorium. Our individual team was put together to be a balanced team, and we did not recommend a moratorium on the death penalty in Pennsylvania. This was not a group of people who opposed the death penalty. We have some members who do and other members who clearly do not. But the ABA conducted a poll. They conducted a poll in Pennsylvania. And Ron's right that a majority of the people polled support the death penalty. But within that group, more of those who support the death penalty want a moratorium and want to explore the fairness of the process than feel comfortable with the process the way it is.
Michael, thanks for the call. We've got Kurt from West Philadelphia joining us. Hi, Kurt. Go ahead. You're Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi,
thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'd just like to address a few issues, if I may. And I'd like to speak to some of the distortions and frankly, the rather specious arguments that Mr. Eisenberg and the Pennsylvania District Attorneys Association continue to perpetuate rather relentlessly.
You know what, Kirk, can you do me a favor? Only because we've got a lot of people. Why don't you just put one out there, and we'll give Ron a chance to respond to it, if you don't mind. Go ahead.
Well, I'd like to say that this issue has been studied again and again and again, and it's been shown in numerous studies that the death penalty in Pennsylvania is applied disproportionately. The system has been plagued for years by false eyewitness identification, inadequate representation, prosecutorial misconduct, and it is a systemic problem that goes beyond each individual case. And I would like to add, for listeners who don't know, that in 2003, the state Supreme Court appointed a blue ribbon committee that went even farther than the American Bar Association, citing many of the same problems and actually calling for a moratorium on executions. This was a committee appointed by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And Mr. Eisenberg talks about neutral bodies studying this issue. The Pennsylvania District Attorneys Association and the Philadelphia District Attorneys Office is hardly a neutral body, that's all.
Okay, Kurt, thanks for the go ahead, Ron.
I don't claim that we are. And in fact, in the court system, and this is one of the things I guess I do like about the legal system and about being a lawyer, is everybody is supposed to make it clear what their bias is, which side they're on, and the truth emerges not out of the mouths of any one side, but out of the interplay, the fair and honest debate between the two sides. And that's the problem I have with so many of these things that have been called studies, whether it's this one, which, although Anne had a prosecutor friend of hers from out in Montgomery County sitting on the panel, it was hardly a situation where they were really hearing in depth from Pennsylvania prosecutors. And the same with the study that the caller referred to. These are not the kind of commissions that I would put together. And I don't expect people to consider a commission that I would put together as a fair and neutral one. In the same way, I ask people not to accept a quote-unquote report or study from the ABA as a truly fair and neutral
one.
Well,
we're back to where we began, which is the makeup of this committee. Go ahead, Ann.
Well, I don't think that this is a committee of my friends, and I rather resent Ron's implication. We worked hard to put together a committee that was not an anti-death penalty committee. We worked hard to bring people into the group who worked with the death penalty. Judge Hazel is a former prosecutor and a sitting judge. He certainly is not opposed to the death penalty. Greg Miller is a former assistant United States attorney. As a former prosecutor, he's not out there fighting against the death penalty, and certainly the Montgomery County DA's office is not fighting against the death penalty. They argue in cases to uphold it. What we're looking for here and what our report asks for is a study of the procedures in the state, an effort to pull together the information that would allow the state to assess further the fairness of its process, and specific steps that would even the playing field. And I don't understand why Ron finds that quite so threatening. I don't understand why the district attorneys do not want to try these cases on an even playing field. And I do not understand why they do not want to have a neutral state body backed by either the governor or the courts gather comprehensive statewide data to find out how we actually are implementing the death penalty.
What's wrong with that, Ron?
Of course we want the neutral playing field, and that's why we participated in and supported the kind of rules that I discussed earlier that require levels of experience and competence and training for appointed counsel in capital cases. But the question here is why we don't want the study. It's because we don't think that groups like this are capable of studying the justness of individual cases better than the system that we already have and have developed over the last 1,000 years going back to England. And that is to have a jury of peers look at all the evidence, hear from both sides, from a defense lawyer who says he's a defense lawyer and a prosecutor who says he's a prosecutor, and have the opportunity to cross-examine witnesses and call their own, and have the opportunity for appeals to higher courts, many appeals. That's the way to look at the justice of an individual case. And when people tell me that there was this unfair death penalty case, I think the proper response is, well then, if you're not against the death penalty, are you in favor of the death penalty for this other case where you don't have a claim of unfairness?
I'm going to give you the last word. Go ahead.
Well, in a system where there are not adequate protections in the investigative process, the identification process, the videotaping of interrogations, in a system where defense attorneys, yes, are now held to a minimum standard of training, but very often work without the assistance of investigators and not as part of a two-person team, where funding is county by county throughout the state and highly variable, it's not the ideal world that Ron envisions. It's not our system working the way it is intended to work.
Well, I would like the two of you to be on a study team together. I mean, why not? Why not?
I think that would be great.
And we have to end our hour. I thank you both. Ron Eisenberg, thank you for joining us. And Ann Bowen-Pullen, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Ron Eisenberg, Deputy District Attorney for the City of Philadelphia. Ann Bowen-Pullen chaired this ABA panel that looked at Pennsylvania's system of death penalty. She's a professor of law at Villanova University School of Law. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. Find out about the program, including podcasts. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to WHYY-FM Philadelphia, your member-supported news and information station serving Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware.